Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I think if I had told my dad, 7 months after you're dead, you're going to be dominating the news and all over Twitter, he would think it was hilarious that our president was so jealous of him that he was dominating the news cycle in death as well.
The subpoena requires Mr. Stringer to go ahead and supply us with documents by Wednesday, and also, furthermore, submit to an interview with the attorneys that have been hired by the State House on Friday.
At this moment, there is something undeniably special happening in Phoenix. Because of the investments we've made, the job market is shifting. Wages are rising as knowledge-based sectors grow.
With us to talk about the new mayor of Phoenix, some of the latest legislative news and more are Marcus Dellartino, partner at First Strategic, and David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Always great to be here. Thanks, guys.
Marcus, how exciting is the new mayor of Phoenix going to be, Kate Gallego? Is she going to make a difference in the city?
Well, you know, any change in the mayor's office is going to be exciting, right? And so now this is her opportunity to sort of put her path forward for Phoenix. And I think that that's going to be chock-block full of, you know, new initiatives, new ideas. There's no doubt about that. The thing that is always difficult about the city of Phoenix is remembering it's a city manager form of government, meaning the city council controls who the city manager is, but at the end of the day, the city manager is really pulling the plug. So elected officials, mayors, and city council people have to, you know, take these big visions or big initiatives and big ideas and sort of get help or buy-in, if you will, from the cities to execute. And that's always really the toughest challenge. But, you know, she's a smart cookie, and I think that she'll be able to build her coalitions and be able to do some of these initiatives and moving forward.
David, is she going to be a forceful leader and someone who really has a vision and an agenda?
I think she will. I think, you know, when she got into this race, a lot of people were discounting her chances. They, you know, Danny Valenzuela had all the union backing and the key endorsements, and I think what Kate proved is that she is a formidable candidate. She can raise money, and she, you know, she can really go out there, and I think that's the kind of mayor she's going to be. She's smart. She works incredibly hard, and, you know, I think her challenge, she's going to have to run again in 2 years, so, and the council's got a lot of division and turmoil, and so, you know, how do you get some accomplishments in that kind of a environment? And so I'm hoping that what she'll do is, you know, pick an idea or two that really she can get onto. I think affordable housing is one. Yeah, that's a big issue right now in Phoenix, and one that, you know, impacts people across economic lines. And so, you know, I think that's an example of something that she can really, if she can show some leadership and get some things done, you know, she's going to be, I think, a very formidable mayor for years to come.
David, do you anticipate that the types of policy issues she takes on and her leadership style will be noticeably different than her predecessor? I mean, the most recent elected predecessor, Greg Stanton?
I think it'll be similar, but you know, I think you know, Kate will build some of more of those coalitions, and she's just, I think she's very pragmatic as well, and she's, so I think it'll be similar, but you know, maybe a little bit different.
Marcus, what do you think?
I agree. She'll be somewhat similar. You know, Mayor Stanton was a Democrat, obviously, and somewhat from the progressive side of the aisle. She shares that in common with him. I think that to that end, I think that they'll have sort of similar ideas. You know, I always, being a dad of young kids, I will say this, she's a mother of a young one, and your multitasking skills develop exponentially overnight. And so that is a real strength, I think, that she'll have going into being mayor.
Marcus, what kind of future does she have? Let's already jump on that train, because we've talked often on this show and other programs as well that the Democrats for a long time didn't seem to have a bench. Maybe that's changing in Arizona. It seemed to based on last November. Is she someone who is an up-and-coming star? How closely are you watching that?
You know, it certainly needs to be watched, but it's going to get somewhat confusing here shortly, I think, because remember, Ruben Gallego who is looking to run for the Senate in 2 years. So you could have two Gallegos in the city of Phoenix on a ballot. And so in the short term, I think people are going to focus on Ruben Gallego running for the U.S. Senate in a primary against Mark Kelly is how that would shape up. And, you know, frankly, I think that announcement's going to come sort of quickly and shortly. And so that'll be the short-term look. And then long-term look, okay, what's that mean for her future? What happens to him in that race? Is he able to pull it off? Is he the next U.S. senator? Or does he lose? And what's his future, and how does that fit into where she is in City of Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, I think her toughest election was this last one. I mean, she's there, and I think, you know, yes, she has to run again in 2 years. But I think, you know, if she does everything right, I think she could be there for many years to come. But, Steve, I think you hit it exactly on the head in terms of 4 years ago, everybody was talking about how the Democrats didn't have much of a bench in Arizona. I think that has changed for sure. I think Democrats' bench is deep and strong now, and Kate is part of that. She's, like I said, she's smart. She works hard. She's proven that she can raise money. And we've got a lot of Democratic candidates that have shown that they can fundraise, they can win statewide, they can appeal to voters statewide. And so, you know, that's a good thing for Democrats, is that our bench is deepening. And I think for Kate, she's certainly one of those people that's going to have an opportunity in the future for whatever she wants to do.
Marcus, David mentioned affordable housing as a potential issue for now Mayor Gallego to take on. Any that you expect her to really be focusing on in the next short term here?
Well, short term's light rail. Definitely, because the voters are looking at an initiative that makes some drastic changes to how light rails, does it continue in the city of Phoenix or not, is essentially the question. And so I think short term, that's going to be her major focus. And some of those members on the city council that she's able to build a coalition, I know they're engaging with some of the groups right now, whether it's contractors or those folks that have a vested interest in continuing light rail. And I think that right now, today, that's going to be the number one goal. I do agree with David, though, on affordable housing. And to that end, you know, we've got to have a discussion about these giblets, these government leased excise tax, where essentially at the end of the day, the government, who does not pay taxes, owns the ground of the building. And the owner then leases that back from the city. It's been a long time practice, but it does need significant reform for everybody's sake, but especially the taxpayers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, giblets, I think, you know, and that impacts schools too. I mean, impacts their ability to raise money to go out and do bonds and overrides. And you know, that's been a big issue at the city level. And I think that's another one that Kate could really you know, grasp. And if she can do something about that, you know, I think a lot of people would be cheering her on.
Now, David, to the other Gallego that Marcus referred to.
Yeah.
Any doubt that Ruben Gallego runs for Senate?
I have very little doubt. From what I'm hearing, I think he's going in, and I think it will be in the near future, very near future.
And how many people do you expect to run for that House seat, and will you be one of them?
I will not be one of them. I expect quite a few are going to jump in. You know, names that I've heard, obviously Laura Pastor, I think, will be one, which then will create more, you know, interesting things on the city council. But I think, you know, Reggie Boulding in the state legislature, Raquel Turan, Fontes, Maricopa County recorder. So, again, it's part of that deep bench. But I think Ruben's going to run.
And do you see any generational issues there? In terms of last time we saw Mary Rose Wilcox against Ruben Gallego, and there was a real divide there. Do you feel like we're just going to see sort of young and up-and-comers, folks you mentioned like that?
I mean, I'm trying to think of who might be sort of the older generational candidate that's out there. None that I've heard that. Actually, Phil Gordon. I've heard that name out there. So, that could be interesting. I think it's going to be some interesting times.
I'd just add Steve Gallardo, also over at Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, another one. Just to give you a concept of how many people are looking to run for the seat, it's going to be a wild, wild west shootout, if you will. And also, back to the original story on the city of Phoenix, there's going through a lot of change over there at the city of Phoenix on that council. And so there's certainly a lot of new blood, but with that comes a learning curve.
It would be a shame if we had to go a few months without an election to fill some position within the city of Phoenix, right?
You're not kidding. And then look at all the elections that could take place you've got Laura Pastor, so that would have to be filled. You've got Reggie Boulding, that seat would have to be filled. Steve Gallardo, that seat would have to be filled. So the dominoes effect starts to take place.
I will say, too, that this also happened when Congressman Pastor stepped down from the seat a few years ago. There was a whole bunch of names early on, And then it kind of filtered out, and we ended up, you know, having, what, two candidates. So sometimes that happens. I think people will talk about it, but, you know, it might get narrowed down quite a bit when it actually comes to it.
David, how do you see a Ruben Gallego, Mark Kelly Senate primary shaping up?
I think it's going to be fierce. You know, I think, you know, Ruben's a strong candidate in himself. He's a veteran, a Marine, and Harvard graduate. So they both come with this with really strong credentials. I think when it comes to Ruben, I think what people are going to be looking at, what Democrats in particular are going to be looking at, is can he defeat Martha McSally in a general election? I think that's, you know, I think Ruben's going to do very well in his district, in his area, Maricopa County. But I think to come out of the primary, I think he's going to have to answer in Democrats' minds that he can be able to beat Martha McSally in a general election. I think that's where a lot of Democrats aren't sure. I think more people think, you know, that Mark Kelly will be the stronger general candidates.
Yeah, I think you're looking at classic case of the more progressive candidate versus the center of the Democrat Party. And that's how today that's going to roll out. Ruben is clearly a bomb thrower, is always comfortable in that role. So I think this campaign will have a lot of media attention around it just from that standpoint.
Before we go to break, though, have you guys commented on this whole bomb throwing thing? Because is there a hesitation? I mean, speculation that one of the reasons, probably a long list, that Grant Woods decided not to run is he didn't really want to attack Mark Kelly because of Gabby Giffords or related things to that. Marcus, do you see Gallego holding back at all because of that?
Oh, absolutely not. Okay. I mean,
I've
known Ruben for a number of years. I've worked with him. Obviously, we're from two different parties, but that doesn't mean we're not able to work on issues together. But I don't see any hesitation. He is the Marine Corps did a very good job training that soldier. He is not afraid to go into a firefight. Yeah, I will tell you that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ruben, when he campaigns, it's no holds barred, and that's, I think, what you're going to see in this case.
That's David Lujan. Also here is Marcus Dellartino with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. We are in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues after this. This is the Friday Newscap on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today are David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress, and Marcus Dellartino, partner at First Strategic.
All right, guys, so let's talk about something at the state capitol this week. The House Ethics Committee had a meeting and basically said to one of their colleagues, Representative David Stringer, that we want you to turn over some documents. We want you to submit to an interview by the investigators. Marcus, it seems as though there's some dispute over whether the documents that the committee wants are allowed to be turned over. Where do you see this whole situation at right now?
What's amazing is, like, you didn't think you could get any more drama out of the story, and then we figured out a way to create more drama. And what happened yesterday is the state Supreme Court ruled that those documents actually cannot be made public. And you know, from a purely legal standpoint, they have a very valid point. You've just said to a judge that sealing a document has absolutely no meaning whatsoever, and you can expect the judge is not the bench is not going to put up with that very well, right? So there's, I think that the committee is somewhat stuck in a odd situation, and I think that the only solution to either to get these documents is to sign a deal with Mr. Stringer that says those will remain private and sort of as part of the investigation, which, by the way, there is precedent in another ethics investigation that those documents did remain private. And so right now I think that's the only solution. But I am a big proponent that the best way to handle this, by the way, is either through a recall election or giving the choice back to the voters in some way, shape, or form. That the proper forum for this debate actually belongs with the voters and not down here at the legislature.
David, do you see what happened this week affecting his ability to stay in the House before his next election?
I do. I think the best thing that could happen is that he will resign. I don't think he will. I think he should have resigned after the racist comments that he made. But yes, I think, you know, it behooves him to actually have more information out there about what happened. You know, he is an elected official that we should know what happened if what's been alleged. And so I think what's going to happen is, I think ultimately the committee is going to move forward to remove him from the legislature. I think that's what should happen if he doesn't resign, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Marcus, and either the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. What adds to this drama, if you will, is that if everybody remembers that these allegations, they're part of these are the comments, but the other part of this was a court case that happened, I think, 20 years ago or at some
or
point a very long time
in the
ago.
80s,
but we are opening up the door then for these precedents to exist where we start looking at all 90 legislators and, frankly, probably the 90 legislators at least, to go up in front of an ethics committee for something that occurred, you know, not as part of their duties as a representative or a senator, number one, but number two, long before they were ever elected to office, to put those up for investigation and then have the body vote on whether they should expel them. I just throw that out there as part of that this saga will continue to go on regardless of what happens to Mr. Stringer.
David, do you think it has legs in that sense?
I think Marx has a point. And I think, you know, for me, I still go back to just the racist comments. I think those alone, are reason why he should be removed from office. And I don't even think they need to get into the charges that happened 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, I think it's going to be up to the committee and to the full the full House at some point. You know, the other issue is, and I think unfortunately, I hope this doesn't get into their thinking, but. You know, we have a 31-29 legislative split. We're coming up into that time where it's budget season and key votes, and so I think, you know, that I hope does not come into the thinking of someone in the majority that, you know, we can't afford to lose that 31 vote.
Marcus, that leads into the question I wanted to ask you, which is that from a practical level or from a political level, has this affected daily doings in the House, the fact that the Stringer thing is still hanging over the body?
I don't think, I don't think it has affected the daily doings as it pertains directly to Mr. Stringer. The daily doings are dependent upon if all the members are there or not, right? And to that end, there's been a couple members who haven't been there that were not Mr. Stringer. Mr. Stringer actually has been on the floor. And so to that end, I don't think it will. But there is some, you know, cognizant thought put into, okay, let's just say we did expel him. How much time do we have to make the appointment of a new legislator to fill that seat? Is that 2 weeks or 2 days? I will tell you in this particular case, I expect it would, if the body votes to expel him, the body would move very quickly to fill that seat. Yeah. There is a procedure that is in statute that needs to be filled, and it can move relatively quickly. I don't think it will hold up the process as much as people may fear.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are already people out there lining up potential appointments, you know, people to fill his seat. So,
well, I mean, is this something that you guys think the county supervisors are at least maybe informally thinking about or talking about? Like, because the city council in Prescott said you should resign. I mean, is this something they have some folks in mind already just in case he does step down?
Well, it's actually a little bit more complicated, but your short answer is yes. But it rests with a body called the precinct committeeman, and both parties, Democrats and Republicans, have that office called the precinct committeeman. Those people will meet and recommend three names. The board of supervisors then will pick from one of those three names. And absolutely, that conversation is happening and that debate is happening. I've been through, you know, about 10 of these when I worked for the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors. And, yeah, you want to be prepared for what's coming your way, and you want to be professional about it. And so to that end, I think that they're making sure their ducks are – if the body makes that choice, that they are efficient – and make a good choice.
Yeah, I have no information on what's happening, but I just know how these things work, and I'm sure that there are Republicans in Yavapai County who are aiming for that appointment, and so they are already, you know, talking to supervisors and PC precinct committeemen, and, you know, jockeying for that appointment.
So, Marcus, let's talk about your former boss, the late Senator John McCain. Somehow he is still dominating the news cycle because President Trump can just not get enough of him. What is going on there? Is this some obsession?
Man. Meghan McCain, God love her, stole my line the last couple days. But I immediately, when I saw that, my first reaction was, God, John is laughing his rear end off up in heaven right now that he's still dominating the news cycle months later. And it's true. I truly believe that. And I... It's a very odd dynamic that's going on. I don't think it behooves the president. I don't think it gets him any votes to talk about it. And frankly, to some extent, the exact opposite. But for some reason, he can't let go. But when you look at his pattern, I think that there's a number of those items that when you look at, he can't let go of some certain things. What is somewhat entertaining is then also watching, and I don't know if most people know this, but I find it fascinating, is Kellyanne Conway has been one of his top advisors for ever since he got elected. And her husband...
That is a fascinating...
is beating the tar out of the President of the United States on a daily basis on Twitter. And I just can't help to think what dinner is like at home.
That's true.
Yeah, David, one quick political thing on this. There's been some criticism lodged against Senators McSally and Sinema recently about how they've handled President Trump's comments. What do you make of that? I mean, we know the boat that McSally finds herself in, trying to sort of play both sides. Should Senator Sinema be more outspoken against President Trump? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think Senator Sinema did issue a statement condoning President Trump's comments.
Not but, condoning, but
yeah,
condemning.
Condemning. But Kirsten had made some comments about not trying to feed into all of the president's Twitters and trying to, you know, just basically ignoring. And that's the thing we should be doing. And I agree with that. But, you know, Senator McCain is an Arizona hero. He's obviously an icon in our state. So I would kind of actually like to see both of them speak out a little bit more on this particular issue. I totally get we should be ignoring the president's tweets because he's just trying to get attention. And, you know, decent human beings do not go after somebody when they've passed away, particularly somebody who's a war hero. And so it's just despicable.
Marcus, any more comments on that?
Oh, I do. I enjoyed Kirsten's comments, and I think I'm a valid believer in her strategy. And I know she was a little frustrated with EJ Montini from the Republic for sort of pushing this button. But her point is valid. We're creating our own news cycle when we when we repeat these stories or respond to them. So I think we've got to start to look at that as sort of a new and evolving strategy.
David, let's wrap up with a few seconds on your beloved Sun Devils.
Only a few seconds?
The ASU men's team plays today at 12:50.
Yes.
Speaking with your head and not your heart, do you think they're going to win against Buffalo today?
I think that ASU today is going to do what the U of A could not do last year, and that is beat Buffalo in the first round.
So. That was impressive. He got a prediction and a dig at U of A at the same time.
Well played. I expect this. I think ASU will make the first round, but that'll be sort of the end of it. And this is a guy who continually bet on U of A to go three rounds and was disappointed every single year. So from that standpoint, I'm saying don't get too heavily vested. But everybody should have fun watching this and play their pool.
That is Marcus Dellartino, partner for Strategic. David Lujan is director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.